This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. If you reach behind you, you can feel your spine, your backbone, forming a hard tube within which the nerves of your spinal cord are protected. And imagine now if your spine does not develop properly, leaving a gap that exposes your spinal cord. And that condition is called spina bifida, which literally means split spine, and is among the most common birth defects that cause permanent disability. Joining us in the studio to tell us more about spina bifida and how patients can lead healthy adult lives are Yung Mi Eng and Dr. Amara Naika, President and Vice President of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. Yung was born with spina bifida, and Dr. Naika also serves as a rehabilitation physician. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
You know, I'm just going to very quickly start with Dr. Amara. I mean, spina bifida is a birth defect where a baby's spine does not develop properly. What does that really mean? I mean, a lot of the literature that I was reading says you have a gap in the spine. Is that literally what happens? There is a gap in the spine?
Actually, we have something called embryonic tissue. That's the early tissue that goes on to form a neural tube. This tube is the one that will go on to form your brain, spinal cord, and all the bones that surround it. Now, what happens is this growth process takes place between the ages of day 1 to day 28 of life. This is often the time even before the mother knows that she's pregnant. So in this period of growth, if there's any insult, either from outside or from a genetic problem, then this growth does not take place in a wholesome way. So what happens is the spinal cord, which is encased inside the spinal column, starts to protrude out because there will be a gap. And this gap is because the spinal column doesn't get to close properly. So essentially, the spinal column gets to close and everything gets to remain in if this growth process in this neural tube takes place uninterrupted. And in spina bifida, often this interruption will lead to incomplete closure, and this gap will allow the spinal cord and contents to spill out. So when the spinal cord spills out, along with it, the nerves and the meninges or the coverings also spill out. Now this stretches the nerves, and so below that level, your limbs, your bowel, bladder all get affected. And this leads to a cascade of problems that we have to deal with when we deal with a child with spina bifida.
Does it matter at all where this gap is along the spine?
It does. Often it's in the lower spine, so that's why only the legs are involved. But very, very rarely it can be at a higher level.
Okay, so you cannot tell, nobody can really tell why. Do we know what causes this gap?
Yes, we don't know what causes it for sure, but we have a lot of risk factors that have given us a strong suggestion as to the possible causes. Things like, we know there are certain genes that are needed for this folic acid to function. Folic acid is one of the most important ingredients for the growth and development of your brain, spinal cord, and its surrounding coverings. Now, when this gene that codes for these for the formation does not work properly, then you may not the spine doesn't form properly.
Okay, I'm going to come back to Dr. Amara after I fix her mic. But Yung, why don't you tell me your story? I mean, you were born with spina bifida. What was it like for you?
It is a rough journey, but it is also a fun journey. It depends on how you look at it. As a spina bifida person, I have to face a lot of challenges. Okay, I think my childhood. I mean, born 48 years ago. Okay,
so was I.
So In these 40 over years, I think I have more than 30 over operations. And most of my life and my school holiday, I spent in the hospital. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was telling Amara all the time, you know, I have a little bag with me, which always have water flasks, metal plates, you know, all those things that I need to be brought to hospital. So I'm in and out hospital, you know, from young. In fact, going to school is a luxury for me sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. But God, thank God, you know, I actually made it and finished my study and all, and a very good career right now. So for me, it is a tough terrain, but manageable. Depends on how you look at life. That is important, yeah.
Dr. Amara, there are many types of spina bifida. What type of spina bifida does young actually have, and you know, as opposed to what the others have?
I'm not sure I'm at liberty to tell you what she has.
Oh, that's okay. But, okay, so because you know what any because there are in my mind there is the spina bifida like Young's, which you know she's able to walk,
correct,
and function. There are those who are, you know, wheelchair bound, and you know, the more severe yes. cases. So, what are the types of spina bifida, and do we know why?
We basically know of three categories. That's spina bifida occulta, which is not seen from the outside. They may just have a tuft of hair or a dimple at the back, and generally, those are the ones that can walk quite well, barring some foot deformities that you might see. Then we have the meningocele, wherein just the covering of the spinal cord is protruding out, and the cord itself is quite unaffected. And then you have the myelomeningocele, which is by far the most common one, but the most severe one too. So here the cord and its meninges are protruding out, and often they will need urgent surgery within 24 to 48 hours to tuck back all the contents and cover up before infection sets in.
After birth.
After birth.
All right. Yes. And as Young was saying, I mean, she's had 30 operations throughout. That's really no fun. How lucky has Young been? I mean, in terms of being able to fix, how fixable is spina bifida?
No, there's no cure for spina bifida. It's a nerve injury that once happens, has happened. But what we are actually looking to do with all the surgery and treatment and rehab is to address problems that are consequent to the spina bifida itself. So the many operations that she has had are likely to be for wound, for deformities. Some also go have operations for bladder problems. Yeah.
Okay. And yes, you as you said, incontinence, paralysis, learning disabilities, all of which come with spina bifida. We are discussing this topic with Yun Mi Ng and Dr. Amara Naikar. Young is actually a spina bifida patient. She's also president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. Dr. Amara is a rehabilitation physician. If you have a question for them, our phone lines are open. It's 0377109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Before I come back to Young, how common is spina bifida here in Malaysia?
All right, we don't have national statistics as it stands, but in the US, it's about 1 to 2 per 1,000. In a country like India, it's about 7 to 8 per 1,000. So my guess is we are somewhere in between.
Mm. Okay. Is it something that we should be worried about?
Yes, we should definitely be worried about, because that's quite a number of patients who will end up needing a lot of medical and social support.
Okay. As I mentioned earlier, Young, I mean, there are many effects of spina bifida. What were you affected by?
Because of my, I'm moving, so I'm mobile. So I have a lot of pressure ulcers. And then also...
Ulcers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. ulcers. And of course, incontinence. But that is manageable. And of course, once in a while, accident happen, okay?
Yes.
So most of the time, it's pressure ulcers. And which is really quite bothering. And it will prevent a lot of activity to be on hot. Because, for instance, like each time when I have operation to fix the ulcer, I will be immobile for maybe two months sometime.
Where are these ulcers?
On the foot.
On the foot.
And sometime on the bum.
Right. Why incontinence, Dr. Amara?
Why incontinence? Well, the nerves from the lower spine supply your bladder and bowel. So when they are affected, then the ability to control your urine, the ability to feel the urge may also be impacted. So often children with spina bifida may not be able to say for sure if that's the time they need to go to the toilet. And because added to that, they also have mobility issues. So when they hold on for a long time and then they try and make it to the toilet, mm-hmm. they often don't manage to, and then they leak.
I was reading you had issues like that in school, young. How did you manage that?
When I was in my standard one, of course, I'm a little bit like strange to classmates and teachers. But thank God I have very good teachers. So they give me like a freeway, you know, like don't have to ask for permission when I need it. Mm-hmm. So I just rush to the toilet. And I'm also, as a spina bifida person, it is advisable to have carried some spares, you know, sometime like change a set of pants or whatever. So for me, preparation management is very important. Mm-hmm. Like when the time comes, like when you're older, you should be better. That means you know when roughly you have to go. You don't have to feel like when there's a needs for it, only then you rush. Because as what Dr. Amara said, with the physical limitation, we might actually trip and fall, and there will be a disaster, yeah. you know. So just make yourself like maybe every half an hour, maybe an hour once, just go. Whenever you see there's a toilet, just go.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how I manage it.
There usually is, you know, some kind of stigma, discrimination in relation to people with physical disabilities, mm. whether it is, you know, physical or mental disabilities. How did you cope with that, you know, socially? I mean, I look at you, you're perfectly fine, you know.
your look can be deceiving.
I know, exactly, right? I look at you, you look perfectly fine. But I'm sure you had your own fair share of struggles.
I think I take life very positive because I'm always looking forward for something, you know, because I found that sometimes when you have a different attitude, something looks maybe quite serious, but it can be quite easy, you know, not so complicated. As long as we can accept it, first of all, I have to come to terms that I'm like this and this is me, and then and also education. For me, when I'm equipped with knowledge, I can fence for myself and speak out, you know, and then also can speak out on behalf of others, which is I'm very fortunate to have doctor with me, with the team, with a very good team supporting all volunteers. So we can help others. So for me, it's about attitude sometimes.
And the both of you decided to start the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. And this is about 8 years ago. Why did you feel there was a need? And even there was no association before, where did you go for support, Young? I mean, did you have to depend on your doctors or family support? Or, you know, where did you get that support from?
Frankly speaking, my mom and my family doesn't not aware of my condition. I was always alone and thinking that I'm actually in an island. That's so strange, you know, why am I always sometimes leaking?
But you had 30 operations.
Yeah, but I was thinking that it is, maybe I'm just a little bit unlucky those days. Mm-hmm. Until when I saw a newspaper advertisement from Dr. Amara under HOKM, they are calling for spina bifida people for together. And then I give a call and the rest is a history, you know. So I went there and then Amara said, you look like one of the more independent mm-hmm. spina bifida person, and also my age is kind of like more matured. So that's how, you know, we decided, and also been put in a platform. They nominated me because they saw that, all the parents saw that, she can walk, you know, and then she can speak. So it's kind of like a motivation for others. Actually, beginning time, I wasn't thinking about coming out so openly, because I found that this sort of incontinence and all this problem is quite personal. Mm-hmm. So I found it like it's going to invade my personal life, yep. you know. So it takes me a lot of effort, and also to see that Dr. Amara is so enthusiastic. She don't have to be, you know. She's not spina bifida people, you know. But she has put out so much of contribution to society. So that actually motivated me.
Fantastic.
And so that is how we start, because many, until today, when I saw some of the little kids, spinal bifida, new cases, we receive a lot of new cases coming forward. Saw them walking, and some of them refuse to walk because they are shy, that people laugh at them. So my job is to tell them that, look, you don't owe anyone. If you can walk, it's a plus point. Who don't want to walk? Nobody wants to sit in a wheelchair for whole life. So for me, that kind of small motivation makes a lot of difference. So with Dr. Amara's support in the medical side, mm-hmm. I think we will work wonders, two of us, yeah.
We'll find out whether or not everybody with spina bifida is lucky enough to get to walk. I mean, I think rehabilitation is key in the management of spina bifida. As you said, Dr. Amara, there is no cure. So how do you manage it is really the issue. So we'll come back and find out more up next. Meanwhile, our phone lines are open. If you'd like to ask either Young or Dr. Amara a question on spina bifida, the number to call us is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment and we're discussing spina bifida with Yang Mi Eng, who's the president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. Yang happens to be a spina bifida patient. And Dr. Amara Naiker, who's a rehabilitation physician and vice president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. Once again, if you have a question for either of them, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Before we get back into the discussion, Dr. Amara, we have a question from Zakir, and Zakir is asking, can stem cell treatment help with the management of spina bifida?
Right. Meera, we get asked this all the time. I think the general public, often thinks that stem cells can cure a lot of things. Unfortunately, that's not the case, and a lot of studies still in the experimental stage. They have been used in spinal cord injury, acute injury. That means soon after injury, stem cells are injected. But even then, we don't have very good data supporting its eventual outcome. So for now, I'll have to say that we really don't know for sure if it works, and we don't have enough evidence for that.
Okay, that seems to be the general consensus for stem cells in a lot of areas, actually. Regenerative medicine seems like the future, but still a long way to go.
Absolutely.
And can now there prenatally you can detect spina bifida, so through scans and stuff like that, when baby is in vivo. But knowing that a fetus actually has spina bifida, what can you actually do?
All right. Usually this detection will come from the obstetrician. And I think it will help if he is in a setup that actually enables a multidisciplinary approach. So what would be ideal is if the doctor could actually link the patient to the multidisciplinary team, which usually would consist of the pediatrician, the rehab physician, the orthopedic surgeon, and the neurosurgeon in the early stage, because often these kids would need surgery. One important thing which I agree with Young is education, awareness. When we equip parents with knowledge, they will be better able to cope. So besides knowledge that they can acquire from the doctors, there's always knowledge out there in the internet that they could read from. And I would also encourage them to approach the association, because it helps to have a lot of peer support. There are disadvantages, though, because you may be talking to a parent whose kid is actually very minimally affected.
Yeah.
And then you may think that that's how things would be, and you might be disappointed. Or it could be the other extreme. But however, it actually gives you a broad base in terms of the spectrum of illness that you can probably anticipate, and how do you actually care for the child. So it's important that, the parents do meet up with a lot of people who can be of help.
As a rehab physician, how do you manage expectations?
That's really tough, Mira, because, you know, it really varies from parent to parent. And
more child to child, actually.
The child in the initial stages have no expectations.
Yep.
It's, you know, the parents who sort of impose their expectations. So sometimes the child is able to keep up, sometimes not. And so the times that the child's ability or disability doesn't match the parent's expectation of ability, that's when we run into some problems. But often we do try and get around it and, you know, have family discussions to you know, allay fears and to reinforce certain expectable outcomes. Yeah. It does take a good team to work together, because one of the most distressing thing for parents is when they hear different things or different treatments for the same problem, because each clinician, the orthopedic surgeon, the neurologist, the rehab physician, we all have an overlap in our treatment. So, you know, we might have differences in which we think that problem should be approached. So can you imagine the parent goes to three different clinics and hears three different opinions? Whereas in UKM, we are very lucky because we have what we call the combined spina bifida clinic. So it's almost like a one-stop center. So kids come there with their parents and they get to meet all the different specialties in one setting. And that sort of saves a lot of time, money, and you know, we all speak the same language then. So, you know, it's very comforting, I think, for parents to get to hear a holistic view rather than piecemeal opinions.
What about emotional support for parents?
I must say we are not, we do have our psychologists who helps out. But I think the most important emotional support will come from the community. So it's their family members and maybe an association like Spina Bifida, where they're going to actually meet a lot of parents with similar and kids with similar problems. So, I think we need to look at more community support here.
Okay. Our phone lines are open. If you want to ask us a question on Spina Bifida, it's 03-7710-9000. Coming back to folic acid, it almost feels like folic acid is the panacea if, you know, we dose on it, you know, while, you know, before the day 28 of the fetus growing. But what are your thoughts on that? Is that really enough? Is folic acid really the cure for all of this?
The short answer is no, it's not the cure. But with nothing else that we have in our armamentarium, we have to make sure that at least we get the folic acid in, because, you know, studies show at least it puts the risk back by 70%, which is a decent figure. And the other 30% comes from probably conditions that is beyond our control, like probably a genetic problem or, you know, the other risk factors like, you know, mother having diabetes. Again, here people are always mistaken when they say diabetes and they're worried that, you know, there is something called gestational diabetes, that, you know, diabetes when during pregnancy. That itself is not so much of a risk. It is the diabetes that happens before the pregnancy. Some women are diabetic from young, so they are more at risk. Obesity, and there are even you know, some literature that says high temperatures, saunas, you know, hot baths.
That's during pregnancy.
During pregnancy, so all these risk factors are there. So we really don't know which one is you know, the one that is causing the problem. But the one that we can handle is folic acid. So yes, we have to try and get that in.
I just want your thoughts on folic acid. And the reason I ask you is because health ministers in the UK are considering forcing food manufacturers to add folic acid to bread to prevent babies being born with spina bifida. Do you think this is drastic? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a good move because in the West, bread is a staple food. So anything to do with bread, flour, you know, cereals, things that they would eat often, it's good to have the supplement in, because unfortunately, most pregnancies are unplanned. And so they may not have enough time to actually take the supplement, and maybe they're not even informed enough. So I don't see any harm in it. Whether it actually brings about any great good we don't know because the incidence, you know, hasn't really dropped in the U.S. in spite of the food fortification. But it does no harm. So I think it's okay.
Okay, very interesting. Young, you've done, I mean, as I said, in my opinion, you've done very well. And now you're sort of helping out people who have similar struggles. What do you struggle with most now?
Actually, I cannot think about.
That's been very positive.
Yes,
actually.
Yeah. I think life has been good, you know. So I achieved what I want in career and my studies and all that. I think it is being happy with what you have, contented, you know. So I don't have much to say that about what I don't have, you know. Yeah, but just one thing that I really want to stress here, because on behalf of Spina Bifida, we were presented a case last AGM, which is last month, a case where a girl was like climb on the staircase with her four, you know, with her two hands and foot, mm-hmm. trying to go upstairs in the school. That really struck me very
hard. A child
hard.
With spina bifida.
Yeah, spina bifida. Because schools in Malaysia doesn't really give proper support for handicap. Not only for spina bifida, it can be any handicap condition. I think that government do have to look into this because education is the one that's going to change, you know, going to give you a very productive or not productive people in the country. So as for most of the majority of the spina bifida are very, I think mentally they are sound, they are good. Some of them can study very high, achieve very good results in school. So I think giving them the basic needs is a necessity. So for me, I wanted to, you know, to plead for government to look into education infrastructure, a better service and better environment for people with disability.
The physical disabilities.
Yeah, to get the basic needs in the society because we wanted to achieve first world country, you know. So I think we need to actually put out all these facilities for the disabled people.
Yep. How do you support children who are, you know, constantly absent in school, Dr. Amara, as from the association point of view? As Yang said, she lost out. Going to school was a luxury. Do we have a support system for children who, you know, are unable to go to school or are, you know, constantly undergoing operations and such?
Mira, it's actually more than just operations as a reason not to go to school. Often it's issues of transport by itself. Parents can't, you know, make arrangements for them to get to school. Then there is a question that, yes, I get to school, but my class is on the first floor. Now, how do I get the child up there? So, you know, basic facilities are not there. The community support is probably not adequate enough. So there are many reasons why kids don't get to school. And like Yang says, education is the key because a lot of things in life can be accomplished if they are equipped with the necessary knowledge and training. They could also be productive people. But if we don't concentrate on their education earlier on, you will have a lot of kids with disability and who can't work, can't hold a job, can't communicate, you know, can't be in a society and mingle. So I would also really stress and hope that the association as well as the government, we can work towards some, you know, very beneficial projects that, you know, that we can put forth to kids with spina bifida in terms of, you know, getting their education going.
Do patients with spina bifida almost always have physical disabilities as the major challenge? Because I also do understand some could be intellectually challenged as well, as in having learning disabilities and all that.
Yeah, about 60 to 75% of kids with spina bifida have average or slightly above average intelligence. The remaining, yes, do have a lot of learning disabilities. They have problems with attention, communication, language, and they tend to be weaker in maths. I think that shouldn't be an excuse not to give them the education, you know, a more holistic education. It's okay. There's other ways of teaching and, you know, get learning going. So, yeah.
Young, you smiled when, you know, Dr. Amara said weakened math. You struggle with math as well.
I shouldn't review too much.
We have calculators now.
Not really. Maybe I born as a Chinese family. I would tends to be quite sensitive towards numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think maybe half is true, but creative, yes, we are very creative. That is for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, so most of us, it's very good with our hands. And then I myself came from a very creative family. So singing, drawing, painting, you know. So all that is like very natural. So I don't know if is it because of I'm spinal bifida or is it because I came from that
good
family?
Genes, maybe. Just a very developed right brain.
Yes, I think so. But in mathematics, it's not too bad. Okay. I can still count. Nobody can cheat me.
Do you, Yang, do you still need to keep yourself physically fit? And how do you do that?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay. But now, because I'm, I can't do certain exercise because of my foot have an ulcer, I'm due for one surgery. So, but one thing is I always do cycling to strengthen my limb. Because I realize that if I don't do that in 2 or 3 weeks' time, I can't walk properly. Sometimes it crisscross, you know. Mm-hmm. So I tend to fall down so quite often. So, but thanks to my family, my parents, they didn't know I was born with spinal bifida. They didn't know how severe was that until they saw Dr. Amara, you know. And because I get bashed out each time when I, you know, have incontinence problem when I was young, they thought that I'm so lazy to even walk to toilet.
Right.
You know, so that was some comical and funny stories when I was young. So exercise is definitely needed when our age get older, because I found my limb, my knee is quite weak. So if I do some cycling in-house, you know, because outdoor now is not so safe, like maybe 1 week twice, so I will be able to walk more stable.
Okay. So, and as a rehab physician, do you find that parents are compliant in bringing their children for, you know, rehabilitation? And that's a huge commitment.
It is, Mira. It is a huge commitment. And again, I can't generalize. There are parents who are able to do it, and there are some who are not able to. And then there are issues with, you know, centers in the hospital. Sometimes you're not able to accommodate that many sessions. So then they are forced to seek sessions outside the hospital in private centers. So there are many factors that affect, you know, the rehab process.
And you would stress on the rehabilitation?
I would. I definitely would, because there's a lot to spina bifida than just walking, actually. Although that is the main goal of every parent. They would like to see their kids walking. But to get to walking, many times these kids have to wear some what we call orthosis, or in layman term, maybe calipers.
Special shoes.
Special shoes, mm-hmm. But calipers. And those calipers can go up even to your hips. And the further up they go, the more expensive. The most expensive one would be a reciprocal gait orthosis, and it can cost nearly 28,000. So equipments are expensive. Wheelchairs are expensive. And then they have needs like diapers. I mean, those who are incontinent, they have to catheterize using catheter tubes. They cost money. And then they need to use diapers. 5 diapers a day, 150 diapers a month would easily cost 400 to 500 ringgit. So in essence, there is a lot to be done in rehabilitation, but it's also a very expensive process.
And so the gaps I see, which, you know, we need help for or support for patients with spinal bifida, are in terms of infrastructure for children going
definitely
to school, especially
yes.
Transportation, cost being the factor for everything, really. Diapers and stuff, just to look after them. A lot to be done, don't you think?
We are very special. We need special care.
No, it doesn't matter, but you know, attention needs to be paid
to
the, you know, needs of people with spinal bifida. And you're only one community. There are a lot of other people with other physical
Absolutely,
disabilities.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why we're trying to get some support so we can channel it to our members.
How do we get support? And what sort of support would you like from the association side?
Okay, I think the as far as the association goes, we have a few things planned out, but again, we need to collect the money for those things. We would like to set up like a one-stop center wherein parents could actually come in and have a service, rehab services, therapy services for them at no cost or very low cost. And we would like to make available diapers and catheters at cost price, or even give it off to parents who really can't afford it. And, you know, even things like equipments like wheelchairs, because we will be able to source these things out for the parents much more easily and at a lower cost than they can do for themselves.
How do we get in touch with you?
Through the association.
Mm-hmm. Is there a phone number?
What you can do is go to our website, www.cbiam.org.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. So that's www.cbm, that stands for Spina Bifida Association Malaysia.org, and you'll be able to find out more from there. Your message, Yang, to everyone on Spina Bifida?
As a Spina Bifida person, I just think that there is a hope there. You know, never give up. Just don't be lazy and manage yourself well, no matter what, you know. You can do a lot of things. It's not going to hinder you from chasing your dreams. So just be positive and optimistic about life.
Dr. Amara?
Well, I would like to not only create awareness for prevention, but also to create awareness to take care of the existing problems and patients who are already suffering from spina bifida.
Okay, so folic acid, dose up on that in terms of prevention. You can try your best. And as far as support is concerned, it is here.
Yes.
Get in touch with the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. That, once again, website is cbm.org. Thank you, ladies, for joining me today.
Thank you.
That was Mira. Yang Mi Eng, President of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia, and Dr. Amara Nayaker, a rehabilitation physician and Vice President of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.